Welcome to Healthcare and Hire, a podcast for healthcare professionals and aspiring healthcare executives looking for information, association, and inspiration from higher-level leaders across the healthcare industry. I'm Iqbal Acha, career consultant, healthcare recruiter, and registered pharmacist. Every week, I sit down to interview healthcare executives, clinical leaders, medical entrepreneurs, and industry experts to learn how they got to where they are today, what they see as the future of healthcare, and what they're doing to make healthcare more accessible, affordable, and effective. Let's find out more about today's guest. Dr. Kevin Barton is the Vice President of Product Strategy for Healthcare Intelligence and Analytics at Inmar Intelligence. He leads a team that helps create insights and makes it easier to understand and predict the personalized needs of today's patients. Prior to joining Inmar Intelligence, Dr. Barton served as the Vice President of Business Development at Tabula Rasa Healthcare, where he was responsible for sales and strategy within the health plan and payer space. He has held numerous roles at Walmart Health and Wellness as well, including Director of Adherence and Patient Outcomes. Dr. Barton earned his Doctor of Pharmacy degree at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences, along with his MBA at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. He has held several leadership roles within the American Pharmacists Association and enjoys mentoring other pharmacists and pharmacy students. Hello, Dr. Barton. Welcome to the Healthcare and Hire podcast.
Hey, how's it going, Iqbal?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. Yeah, it's. I know we've been planning this for a while, and I'm glad we're finally able to get together. It's exciting.
I'm really glad that we have this chance to be together and really get a great opportunity to learn more about you, your company, and all the great things that you do. Kevin, you and I have known each other now for quite some time, many years back in our heyday when we were running around all over the country doing things for our mutual employer. I'm sure there are many people that are listening to this episode today, meeting you for the first time. Why don't we take this opportunity and have you formally introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are, what your role is, and how do you help take healthcare to a higher level?
Sure. So my name's Kevin Barton. I'm currently the Vice President of Product Strategy at Inmar Intelligence. I have a responsibility over healthcare intelligence and analytics at Inmar Intelligence. I'm a pharmacist by training, where I was a staff pharmacist there for a little bit, went through management operations, where you and I met, more of the corporate setting, did a little bit of managing clinical services and creating clinical programs for pharmacists and technicians across the country. Did that for about 6 years and then moved into sales of all things for pharmacy kind of healthcare technology, and did that for about 2.5 years before landing this role. Every opportunity has been completely different from one another, which I like the challenge. I like learning new things. And so in my current role, it deals with healthcare intelligence and analytics, obviously. The more I separate myself from clinical services, the question is harder, right? To say, how do I take healthcare higher? But at the end of the day, you know, my goal, no matter what I do, no matter what role I have, at the end of the day, it's to better the lives of whether that's folks in the company, whether it's patients that pharmacists serve, or even other, you know, medical roles or, jobs or clinicians that are out there. At the end of the day, I just want to help people. And so, you know, my goal right now is to go out, do market analysis and research and see what opportunities and what gaps healthcare professionals are facing out there today, and how data in general can help drive some of those, you know, decision making, strategic decisions that they make for their organizations.
you said that, you know, it, if you stay doing the same thing, like within the clinical services capacity, you'll lose sight of a lot of future things that are up and coming. And we are living in such a spontaneous and dynamic, volatile environment today, right? From a technology perspective, from a consumer driven, you know, customer preference perspective, and data is king. Like without knowledge, without even being able to collect that, like how do you know what your patients are going to want, need, struggling through, and how and what solutions can be created from that? So I think that you're in a prime spot to be able to really talk about where healthcare data and healthcare analytics are really changing the game for providers, patients, and payers as well. You know, for those that are meeting Kevin for the first time or listening to Kevin and I talk today, you may be wondering about Inmar Intelligence. And it's one of those companies that's actually been around for quite some time. If I'm not mistaken, it started about 40 years ago. And it started out, if I'm not, just as a coupon clearinghouse. You know, back in the day when you get coupons, I mean, we had Safeway, Jewel, Osco in this area. And, you know, we just get all these coupons and somebody's got to be responsible for figuring out, you know, who's using them and how frequently are they being utilized and employed. And that's how the company began. Fast forward 40 years later, you've grown into an organization that has 6 corporate locations. You're funneling and working with Fortune 5000 companies where $120 billion of commerce are running through your systems. And the products and services that you're providing, especially in the healthcare space, are pretty important, right? You're doing a lot of data analytics work for hospitals, chain pharmacies, independent pharmacy solutions, pharmaceutical companies, not to mention what you're providing for government, fintech and retail companies as well. So, you know, when you think about how a pharmacist or a healthcare professional fits into this, everyone is like, so wait, what is a pharmacist? How can a pharmacist help? And I think that that's where we're going to want to delve in right after this. But I think it's remarkable. Oh, how could I forget? You know, I took a look at your website and, you know, again, it's for a company that's not on everyone's top of mind, you guys have won a boatload of awards. I mean, you've won 7 awards this year alone, including Drugstore News Retail Excellence Award. You've won GHP's Best RX Technology and Data Specialist Award. And you've also been certified as a great place to work, not to mention the Effie Awards and the, I mean, the list goes on and on. So
I was gonna say it's a hidden gem. Yeah, it's when I was approached for this position, I only knew of one solution Inmar did. It was even coming into this, I was fascinated about everything that Inmar does. We do a lot.
And you get a lot of exposure in what you do, right? Because you're not just working in one space with one customer, right? You have the opportunity to help other collaborate with others within the organization across different locations and across different sectors as well. So let's talk a little bit about some of the things that, you know, you do today and maybe an initiative that, you know, or maybe a result that's recently come up because of the work that you and your teams do, or something that you are currently working on where you've realized or Inmar Intelligence as an organization has said, hey, here's something that we're seeing that's just an untapped market. We're not sure, you know, who's working on this, but we think that this has potential. And here's why we think we can be a solution to you know, that particular group.
Yeah, to your comment on just like being a pharmacist in a company that does so many things, you know, the one thing that I'm excited about is, you know, for years, either working in a pharmacy or focused on health and wellness or focused on a pharmacy, you know, selling a pharmacy product, like, it's almost like I had horse blinders to where I can only think of it as a pharmacist. And just already, you know, I've only been here for about 9 or 10 months, but already, you know, working with people on our fintech segment or martech segment and just seeing how other industries are thinking about things, not even healthcare, and how you can apply those to healthcare. I mean, it is a very unique place to be, and it's really exciting. You know, some of the things, or again, with me being so new, a lot of this is just kind of like discovery ideas, those types of things, like where do we want to go strategically within healthcare? You know, one thing that I want to work on, and I'm doing some, you know, market research here, and I know everyone is approaching it from different angles, but it's health equity and social determinants of health. It's a problem that no one has found the silver bullet, And nor do I expect or anticipate me finding a solution that would be the silver bullet. I do want to say that. But what I hope to accomplish within data and analytics is, how do you use all of the data that's out there to help organizations understand who their community is, who they're serving? And I'm not saying you have to act on what the data says, but at least it's a start, right? Because, you know, obviously the smaller pharmacies, they get to know their patients, they understand who their communities are, right? But some of those insights are extremely valuable. And, you know, let's just say marketing to patients around services and those types of things, not necessarily a shotgun approach is going to work. You know, if you have one message across the country, you know, you may see success, you may see failure. And so just data and insights to help drive, what is it does that community need? And focus on that. You know, if it's food disparities and those types of things, maybe you work with the front end or the grocery side of your business to truly figure out what services you can do to accommodate that, versus, you know, others that may be more cost conscious, to where you might figure out how you do discount cards or some of those things to make things more affordable. And so that's where I really want to take this, right? And, you know, healthcare specifically, and Inmar's done it well, is we've really focused on the financial management for pharmacies. So reconciliation, contract management, those types of things. And we do a lot of work within the reverse distribution space in terms of the returns process for pharmaceuticals and those types of things. There's nothing really that looks at the patient care aspect. And so, you know, the whole intent of this is how taking healthcare higher, right? Is this is where I want to go, to where I'm not saying we're not taking healthcare higher, because all of these things, you know, influence efficiencies to indirectly make things more available, right? But I do want to more directly play a role in how organizations can, you know, care for their communities better.
You know, Kevin, I like how you frame that, because I think that there is a disconnect when somebody from the outside looks in and says, well, you know, it's obvious you can see where, you know, there's a gap in understanding between organizations and the communities that they serve, right? You can see where, you know, a certain population is suffering or struggling to make ends meet from a health perspective, financial perspective, you know, even a nutritional perspective, right? But then the influence that's necessary to be able to first and foremost take the data that's there and showcase, here are some solutions that will be beneficial for your community, which in turn generates more loyalty, generates more, you know, goodwill, which also generate more business for you. That's one step. The other piece of the conversation that we're having right now, I think, is also critical, because, you know, the more I work in my current space of talent acquisition, you know, we find that, you know, we know what the job is, right? From a talent acquisition perspective, you have a need, a vacancy that you need to fill with top talent. So, you know, just go do. But the reality of it is that the data that's necessary to be able to showcase to leaders, here's how many more people I need, because this is how many vacancies you have, and here is the talent pool, and these are the efforts that my team is doing, and here's how long it takes. And the reason why I bring that up, Kevin, is because, you know, I find, and maybe I'm in a bubble, but I find that most organizations today lack the quality data that's necessary to provide us in other consulting companies to help us analyze it well. Do you see that in the case of social determinants of health, is there a gap in companies and organizations and associations being able to collect good data in order for you and your company and others like you to be able to say, well, here's the connections and here's where the gaps lie? And what are some solutions that maybe Inmar or others are working on to get better data?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be a continuous problem. I mean, when you think about the outdated technologies and some organizations that are out there, how fragmented our health system really is. And even from a data perspective, systems not talking to each other, you know, duplication of data. And there's so many things that we have to get right first. But there are some things that we can get right now based on matching algorithms and those types of things. And it's going to take multiple sources of data. I don't think there's going to be one company, and if there is, hats off, that has the data themselves that can take all, you know, take care of all of this themselves. It's going to take partnerships, collaborations, supplementing it from other sources. I mean, it's going to be a conglomerate aggregate set of data to provide those insights. And again, it's, you know, kind of the, you know, the unprofessional way of saying, you know, garbage in, garbage out. The data has to be clean and it's got to be quality data too, right? And so we can have as much data as we want, but if it's not the right data going in, we're not going to get the outcomes that we truly want. And so it's just, it's kind of taking those baby steps, right? Is where do I need this data set? Where do I need that data set? And let's at least just see what it produces and then scrub and clean it and figure out how we can get, you know, get better data out of it. But let's at least start with some baby steps and, you know, solve for the larger problem.
I find that that's the right approach, Kevin. I'm glad that you said that too, because I think when I speak with individuals, no matter what sector of an organization they're working in, or what whatever industry they're in, right? You'll have your HRIS people, you'll have your data analyst people, you'll have your business leaders, HR, legal, and they all sometimes just want the final answer, which is not like, you know, flip a switch and here you go, right? There's like, I need to get from A to B before we can even talk about what G and H look like. So let's work together in that space as well. Kevin, as a pharmacist, like, have you found yourself, you know, leveraging some of your experiences as a clinician in the space that you do today for other sectors, or for other companies that are not healthcare based, or specifically, is there a particular, and you don't have to mention their name, of course, but is there a particular healthcare client where you were able to leverage your pharmacy background to showcase something that was probably right underneath their nose and says, hey, did you know that this exists for you today? And here's a solution to help you fix that problem.
Yeah. So the thing I'm really proud of, and it may even be an opportunity, right, is, you know, Inmar has somewhere up to 5,000 employees across the company, and I'm one of four pharmacists. And so it's a huge opportunity, but there's so much opportunity I can provide as a pharmacist, right? And just the skill set and the experiences that I've had. Now, what I will say is currently a lot of that is simply operational. The fact that some of us have been kind of on the bench, been pharmacists, we've seen the workflow, we understand and can at least speak the same language of how we can introduce efficiencies here, there. We understand the end goal is to take better care of the patient, or at least improve their experience or improve their quality of life. And so how we can get there from our experiences as pharmacists in the pharmacy, understanding all the operational tasks and how we can clean that up a little bit, has primarily been the role I've been able to play coming in, you know, as a pharmacist. Now, what I will say is, you know, there are some segments, you know, in the marketing area who might market for OTC and those types of things. And I've started seeing that they'll kind of ping me a little bit and say, what are your thoughts from a clinical perspective of if we did this and that, which is really interesting, you know, to be able to, again, you know, cross over into the different segments. That's why, you know, like I said, I really enjoy being at Inmar, because it's things like that where people are appreciative of different perspectives, and just to operate that way and be able to provide any kind of insights that I can is really neat. And kind of on that same point, would have I ever imagined that this is where I'd be coming out of pharmacy school? Absolutely not. You know, in pharmacy school, they tell you you're either going to be a community pharmacist or a hospital pharmacist. And so, you know, to go from corporate to being a salesperson to now being data and analytics and working through there, I would have never been able to even fathom being a pharmacist in this scenario.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we're at a really wonderful point in life, I guess, or in the world, where you're able to literally take an experience and knowledge and skill sets in one area and completely leave that and still have them applied in a different space. And I think that this is really where, you know, the audience that's listening today can take comfort knowing that, you know, whatever decision you're making at whatever point you are in your career, so whether you're, you know, a student, a new graduate, somebody that's been practicing for 5-7 years, or you're an old season, you know, professional or an old CEO, just an old guy like me, you know, that's been out of school for like 25, 30 years. Like the ability to pivot is not based upon the piece of paper or the letters after your name. It's your insatiable curiosity, your ability to interface and interchangeably apply skill sets that you learn along the way. And Kevin, you've always been a very, you know, naturally curious person that allows you to, you know, ask good questions and be able to take that in the right space and continue working, you know, in the right way to be able to open up doors and to shed light for others as well. So, you know, as we talk about healthcare data and analytics and, you know, all the great things that are happening in the world today, you know, I'm sure that you speak to not just colleagues inside or internally, but also, you know, other subject matter experts from different competitors and different areas of the space. You know, how do you see, you know, tools and technology or just the industry changing over the next 2 to 3 years that's going to be important for people that maybe are considering this career or a career change? And they're like, I want to be able to learn more about data collection, data aggregation, data analytics. But, you know, I don't know if what I learned today is going to be good enough for 2025 or 2026. Are there things that are already in development now that are like starting to leak out or eke out into the ethos where you're like, oh, now we should be working on this and not so much that? You know, I'd love to get some insights from, you know, from your perspective about what's hot and what is things that you would guide others towards so that they can maybe even just dip their toes into that water so that they're more ready for what the world has to offer in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, you know, there are probably a handful that exist, but I would say someone who's been a clinician who now has their degree in engineering is probably very rare. And so as we think about healthcare, there's going to have to continue to be a collaboration between those who have experience on the healthcare, the clinical side, even just healthcare in general, and working along engineers who can actually, you know, bring to fruition all this technology. The buzzwords of machine learning and artificial intelligence and, you know, what other words have come out since then, even we're going to have to work together. And even on, you know, the concept of just data in general, and you kind of alluded to it in your consulting example, is as much as we want data to drive all of our answers, there's still going to have to be the human touch or the human concept. And so as we think about technology and years, using AI and machine learning just gets us there quicker. To your point, you know, people don't want to think through it. They just want an answer, right? And even consumerism has driven that. Even the speed to knowledge has grown exponentially. You know, it's like, you know, the pharmacy example where everyone expects their prescription to be done in 15 minutes because Starbucks gets my coffee done that quickly or McDonald's hands me my meal that quickly. It's just, everyone sees the efficiency of one certain consumer-driven workflow, and they expect everything to work like that. And so I think the important thing is while we can drive, you know, data integrity and those types of things are going to be important in the next 5 years, but as we think about how we become smarter, how we can use technology to help us become smarter, the one thing that's always going to be there is that hands-on approach and kind of the human aspect to all of this, because there's always going to be unique scenarios. I'm going to say, in my opinion, can't be solved by a computer, but I know in 5 years it might be solved by a computer. And I would have never known a Tesla would have come out, you know, when it did, you know, self-driving cars, who would have known? But, you know, it's data can only get you to a certain spot. And that's, you know, with the health equity and social determinants of health, what I've told, you know, prospects or who I've been having these discussions with on what the interest would be here is, even if you wanted to, the last thing I'd want you to do is use this data to make your final decision. I want the data to help you make a decision, but at the end of the day, you're still going to have to be hands-on. Your pharmacists are still going to have to talk to those patients and truly, you know, be one-on-one. You can't just have data, you know, drive everything. And so all that to say, there's going to have to be collaboration with clinicians and engineers much, much more closely than there probably is today, to be quite honest. But then them collaborating to ensure there's still that human touch with, you know, the intelligence we continue to intertwine with technology.
You know, I'm glad you called that out, Kevin. We haven't had that discussion at all yet in the series because, you know, all the guests that do come on are healthcare professionals and they have moved on in their career to work in a director level or higher role. But, you know, when we think about being a clinician, I think a lot of the times when I have conversations with others, it's about just communicating to patients. Right? That like you're a human, they're a human. And so the decision that's been made by a computer just needs to come through the mouthpiece and with the right tonality and the right voice and vocal variety so that the patient understands what is happening. And that's not the case, right? Like you know, when you were talking, I just had flashbacks of that Will Smith movie, I, Robot. Where you know, yeah, Sonny, right, is like making all of these like algorithmic decisions in his head, and he's like, well, obviously, like the most efficient decision is to do this, and you know, in the movie, of course, Will is like, no, you have to save that individual and not like do that, and I think that that's where you know the value of humanity, empathy, and understanding can never be replaced. I don't really care like how great the algorithms are, whether you save $1 or $1 billion, right? At the end of the day, somebody is going to have to make a judgment call because there is no scenario, there are no two scenarios where everything is exactly the same. You're not going to get that here in Chicago. You're not going to get that in Chickasaw County. You're not going to get that anywhere. And you need to be able to have good people that understand the data so that they can apply it in that situation. And not just rely on what was handed to them. So I'm glad that you call that out. I think that that's probably blowing my mind and probably going to have to add that movie back into my Netflix queue just to see what other pearls of wisdom I might pick up from many years ago.
Yeah. I mean, even like, the clinical services I used to manage, specifically medication adherence, right? If someone's not adherent to their medication, it's not, hey, I'm going to use the data and say, you need a refill. And that be it. You have to dig into it. You have to have conversations and compassion and listen to the patient of why or what their barriers might be to filling that medication. And too often, at least back then, what I see them just see a adherence score. And just, I see A and I'm going to do B, but just because I see that they haven't come in and filled, when in actuality, you really have to have that human touch and truly understand, or you're never going to be successful, in driving that right behavior.
Yeah, that's a great flashback too, right? Like how many patients would come in and simply be, you know, told, well, oh, we've got your refilled medications ready to go. And they're like, I don't take that. And, you know, especially during a counseling session, right? Like how many pearls of insight would, I mean, I received them as a pharmacist when I would counsel my patients, like going through the dosage and the side effects, only to learn that they've been taking two different over-the-counters that actually like, you know, have negative effects with that medicine. And I think that those are, again, things that where we talk about data in, data out. You know, that's some great call outs.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Kevin, you know, in this conversation, I'm just picking up so much passion in what you do, right? Like you're able to tap into this pool of energy where you're like, this is what excites me. You're finding ways to refill that energy pool and then also share it with others. And knowing who you are as well, I've seen you being able to mentor others and kind of guide them in that space. But like, what is it that motivates you today to have this consistent optimistic attitude and approach towards problem solving and people and just the way that you come across is like you're a really nice guy to be around. How are you just staying so motivated in this space? And what is it that you do to refill this energy? How are you so happy?
Well, in terms of capturing your interest, some people have told me it's the Southern accent, so that's probably part of it. No, in all honesty, I think I mentioned this. Actually, I don't think, in terms of helping people, what truly motivates me is if I can make someone smile. And if I can make someone smile, it just continues to drive that passion and motivate. And that smile can be anything from, you're making someone's life easier, or, in the example of healthcare, if you make a patient's life easier, just that one smile makes your day. And I'm sure a lot of pharmacists or even doctors can relate out there. You've got people who are, potentially yelling at you, not because of you, but because of insurance and those types of things. But what I remember is that one patient who took time to thank me and smile made me forget about the other 10, you know, stressful moments that were within the pharmacy. And so over time, it's just, how can I make someone smile? And whether that's, you know, just being optimistic or, you know, being engaging or those types of things, at the end of the day, whatever I have to do, I want someone to feel better and just smile. You know, happiness is contagious, right?
It absolutely is. And, you know, I'm glad, you know, I feel like I've learned to adopt that philosophy many years ago. And now I don't think about it. Like, I don't stop to think, I have a choice. I can be negative about the situation or I can be positive. I had to do that a lot in the beginning because, you know, the natural instinct is to gripe, complain, critique, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, it's been rewarding when you have that glimmer, that one shimmer of hope that comes out of the gray. And yeah, as a pharmacist, I've had a few patients that would like bake goods back in the day before it was still, you know, copacetic before COVID and when you could accept, you know, baked goods.
Yeah.
It was just like, you didn't even need to do that. Like I do what I do every day for 200, 300 people in and out. And you just decided to take the time to appreciate me. And that means a lot. So that's good. Kevin, when you think about career growth, like, you know, you've had a great career, right? Looking back and looking at your LinkedIn profile and knowing who you are, like, you know, today you're working as the vice president of product strategy of healthcare intelligence and analytics at Inmar. Prior to this, as you mentioned, you were the vice president of business development at Tabula Rasa Healthcare. And then even before that, like, you served as a director of adherence and patient outcomes at Walmart, and the list goes on and on. But, you know, you've taken steps, like deliberate, conscious steps to being able to position yourself either from a knowledge base, a connection base, you know, an exposure capacity to help open doors and to help advance your career. Like, what are some of the things that you would say, you know, maybe not some of the things, just one specific thing that you felt that you were able to utilize again and again or perfect in the course of your career advancement and your professional journey that you would say, this is like really the number one thing that people should be aware of and begin to work on it so that when they do it, it actually works for you and it will work for others as well.
Yeah, you know, it all comes down to the core of it is networking and how important networking is. And I mean that because, you know, my philosophy is I'm never going to have the answer. I always like to collaborate, and whether that be internally, or I think you had mentioned, like, how do I work with competitors or even other friends in the industry just to get their ideas and perspectives on things. You know, maybe a few years ago, I was a little embarrassed on how quickly I kind of come to the position I'm in now, but now I take pride in it because of the things that I've been able to learn. And a lot of kind of the speed of which, you know, I've kind of progressed in my career is learning from those who have been either in the industry or in their position for a while. And they quickly teach you, you know, the things that work, that don't work, what they've experienced, what to do, what not to do. And it's just like family, right? Like, people, you're raised to learn from their mistakes. And when you build that network of people who are willing to provide you with advice or mentor you, you just learn quicker in how you can, you know, pursue things in a different way. And when I think about leadership and, you know, some of the things that help me as I've progressed, it is those people who have been willing to pour into me. And just learning, you know, like I said, from those perspectives has truly helped. And I, again, at the core of it, it's really about networking and getting yourself out there and being curious, learning from others, asking questions, and then just taking that, putting it in your toolbox and using that in your, you know, progression within your career.
Kevin, let's delve into that a little bit deeper, right? Because I know many times guests, including myself as a host, will talk about networking and the value that it brings and how it should be an integral part of anyone's internal marketing strategy or growth strategy or career strategy, independent or organizational based. But I think a lot of the times people struggle with the how, right? They know the why, they understand, you know, where the value comes from. Are there any best practice tips that you would share with people that are listening to today's episode to say, you know, there's a couple of things that I did in the beginning that I tried because I thought it was going to work and it didn't. Or maybe there's things that you do time and time again that instantly have high ROI.
Yeah, that's a really good question. The one thing that has been most successful for me is involvement. And I say that because you've got, you know, outlets like LinkedIn who call a network, but let's be honest, if you have 5,000 connections, is that really your network, or are you just trying to grow the number of connections you have? Now, in parallel, talking about LinkedIn, I would say that if I'm, you know, going through, sometimes it'll suggest people to connect with, or if I'm looking and I see someone's post, if their title or their experience seems interesting, yeah, I might connect with them. I may not immediately talk to them, but there's going to eventually be a time where I think that they might have some valuable insight, or just their experience might be intriguing, and I might shoot them a note, you know, on over LinkedIn. Now, that isn't the most successful, because as many being a salesperson in my last role, everyone's trying to sell stuff through messaging and LinkedIn, right? So it's not the easiest. I almost have to caveat it sometimes with, hey, I'm not trying to sell you something. I legitimately want to have a discussion, brainstorm, and think through things. And that's helped. That's worked a little bit. But what I've really contributed to my, you know, core network in terms of what I contribute to my career progression are things. And you won't always have the opportunity to be involved nationally, but I do contribute my involvement in the American Pharmacists Association as a student, as a new practitioner, you know, even throughout my career within Walmart. Just being involved and being an advocate, being involved in mentor-mentee programs within American Pharmacists Association. There's so many different, you know, things that you can do within an organization. And being at the national level, it's you know, there's tentacles that reach out there. There's people that will ask you questions because they're curious, you know, what you can do. And there's committees, right? Even being involved in your community, you know, the world is smaller than you think. And being involved in your community, you know, certain, you know, after school programs or after work things, hobbies, those types of things, you just gain these connections and you can build a network that you wouldn't even think, you know, would be of value in the long term. So all that to say, I really contribute a lot of my successes just being involved, getting myself out there and just meeting people, you know, through different organizations.
You know, Kevin, it's so refreshing to hear that. And I think that what gets lost in a lot of these conversations is people will look at an opportunity to belong to an association or belong to a group, but their biggest hurdle is with that when such an opportunity comes along, or if they're exposed to it, they feel as if they need to do something grand within that group, right? Like, I need to, if I join, they're going to ask me to do this, and I just don't have the bandwidth. And to be really transparent with you and the listeners, you know, I have found in my experience that a lot of the work that needs to be done is simple, trivial administrative tasks that just need to be done in order for the organization to move forward with its goals and its mission. We're not talking like some big vision that needs to be created out of thin air for the group or, you know, the organization to realize, oh, wow, this is what our true calling is. And we couldn't have done it without you, Iqbal. It's literally, I need to go ahead and order this, you know, these supplies, and I need to schedule these meetings, and I need to make sure that our members are getting information. And it's a simple ask. I find myself drawn and attracted to opportunities like that, where it's like, look, I've got 30 minutes a week. Sure, no problem. I can just go ahead and pick that up from you and just crank out something, and I'll put my little flair on it. And they're like, wow, you were so helpful. And that is where what you were talking about, Kevin, is so critical, right? Yes, you can have a very large network on LinkedIn, but what is the quality of that? Have you met these individuals? Have you spoken with them? If you're doing it just to show the number, that's not your network. Your network is people that you can call upon if you need a advice, guidance, or a connection to open up a door. And so it's really great to have you say that. Kevin, you know, when you think about You mentioned this earlier, right? Like because of the networking that you did, people poured into you and people poured their life experiences, their professional knowledge, things for advice from their perspective for you to avoid and things for you to pursue. Are there, or is there at least one person that you'd like to publicly acknowledge on this show for having led the way for you? And if you've got more than one, that's great. But I always ask my guests, like, who's that one person that might be listening today that has no idea the impact that they had on you, but you realize in retrospect, because of that person, I would not be here without them.
Yeah. And you know, this person too, Suzanne Hyland, right. And you know, just how humble she is and just the incredible leader she is. I would not be where I am today if it weren't for her. You know, one thing I didn't mention is once I graduated pharmacy school, I did my postgraduate year one community pharmacy program. It was with, you know, University of Arkansas and Walmart in collaboration. And Suzanne happened to be the residency coordinator for the Walmart side. And just, you know, talking about the pouring into and developing me, she apparently saw something in me, and I'm glad she did, because she just, you know, took that and ran with it and just was a champion. And one thing that just, I've never experienced this with any other leader, you know, it's just, there's a difference between constructive feedback and criticism and how you approach that, right? And sometimes you may be wanting to approach it in a very positive, you know, constructive way, but it may come off wrong. And Suzanne just has a natural tendency to, it's inspiring. It's not just, hey, you know, you could have done this better. It's a way to where, wow, you know, like, I do want to focus on that and, you know, improve on that. And, you know, the other thing too, that just, I continue to just, I always remember this moment of when I told her that I potentially have another opportunity outside of Walmart. She was so invested in my career, my progression. You know, the organization wasn't in the discussion. She wanted me to succeed. She wanted me to grow. She wanted me to gain all of this experience to where it was all about me and, you know, her caring of how my progression and development was. And I, you know, I don't even think in the future there's ever going to be a leader that I've worked for that's like Suzanne. And I still keep in touch with her, but man, she's made an impact, whether she knows it or not, that has completely changed my trajectory, how I think about things, and then ultimately how I try to mentor others. You know, a lot of that I can thank Suzanne for, just in how she approaches some of those things as a leader. It's inspiring, it's infectious, and something, you know, she's someone who I want to strive to be, you know, as I progress in my career.
I'm very glad and very overjoyed for a few reasons. Number one, you mentioned Suzanne, and I think the world of her as well. But I also am very glad that you've had that experience to have a leader that is altruistic is probably not the right word, but that's the word that comes to mind, because Suzanne has just never been somebody that's ever looked at a win-win situation. It's always been a what's the win for you.
Absolutely. Right?
And that's how she's always operated. And for those that have a leader like that, or a mentor or a sponsor, where you know that this individual puts things to the side to says, okay, we're here to talk about you and nothing but you. So what else do you need? And how can I help you in that space? You know, those are rare moments, and those are rare people. And to have that opportunity to continue your relationship with her is fantastic. I'm trying not to gush here as well, but I absolutely understand. And I resonate that with you very strongly in that space. And I'm really glad that you have that.
You know, as a leader yourself, Kevin, like you've got, you know, responsibilities, whether they are built in into the role that you have today, or whether you reach out and create those opportunities. As you've mentioned, you volunteer, you know, work and volunteer your time with organizations and develop others as well. You know, when you think about leadership development, not just for yourself, but for others around you, there's probably a few resources that you turn to maybe on a regular basis to refill your cup, whether it's energy or knowledge from a leadership perspective, but also to help others. Maybe there's a book on your nightstand or a particular speaker or an author that you turn to regularly, but I'd love to help share some of that insight that you have with the listening audience today. What do you recommend to others when you think about a leadership journey and how people can grow today and what they should read, watch, listen to help them take their leadership to the next level?
Yeah, so I'm not a big reader. I have a very short attention span. But if I do read a book, it's really to sharpen my tools for whatever position I'm in, right? But what I do think is valuable, I know he has a huge following, Simon Sinek, you know, from a leadership perspective. I love watching his videos. And for someone who has small attention span, when you can go out there and just watch 2 or 3 minute videos that are super valuable, by the way, you know, those are just quick snippets for a lot of people who are super busy, that you can just take, you know, 3 to 5 minutes and really learn from a leadership perspective, from a different, you know, scenario, his experiences. But there's other times too, if I'm just curious about how I can improve on a certain leadership aspect, or how I can have better conversations, or even quite frankly, how I can motivate someone better. As millennial as this sounds, Googling and finding those resources is the easiest thing for me. And I gain so much value, you know, from that perspective. It's quick to find so many different resources so that you're not just looking at one resource to, you know, gain all of this perspective. It's, you know, for those times where there's one specific aspect and you go through 10, 15 different websites to see from the different perspectives, it's been really, you know, impactful for me. But Simon Sinek is someone who, you know, is typically my go-to. He's very inspiring and really has some really good, you know, call outs and recommendations for leadership.
What have you Googled recently in the leadership space that you were surprised to read or come across? I know you said that you get a lot of these things. I do the same. I'm not a reader. You can listen to past episodes. I hate saying that it's a badge of honor, but it really is. I just don't have the bandwidth or the capacity for it. So I do Google like things that I will come across and I'll say, oh, that's pretty cool. But, you know, I find Brian Tracy is one of my like go-tos as well. But is there something that you've like maybe recently Googled where you were like, oh, cool article, and that you maybe shared with somebody else or want to share with me?
Yeah, no. So actually, Simon put out, it was like a 2 or 3 minute video, and it's part of a longer discussion. But it's really about how to thrive long term. So it's, you know, it's not only about today, it's how do you think forward to ensure that you're thriving, you know, longer. And I think in today's society, that's really important, right? You know, it's COVID hit, you know, a lot of people are kind of just struggling really with how do you move forward in this hybrid environment. You know, a lot of organizations have that. And so from my perspective, I wanted to learn more about how do you thrive in a society more long term, you know, versus just the immediate, because it's going to change too. And, you know, the importance of having kind of his examples where your infinite game and your finite game. And, you know, it doesn't mean that your infinite game is absent of finite games. It's really, there's multiple finite games within this infinite game. And so to just kind of take these bite-sized chunks and learn them along the way. And it's, you know, it's something, like I said, it was a 3 minute video, but it just gave me this new perspective of how I can approach my team. If there's a certain direction that I feel like they're going, and they, you know, they need to kind of change their perspective to be lifted or motivated. It's just kind of thinking about that bit by bit, and how can you pivot at the moment for the more, you know, the longer term game.
You'll have to send me that, Kevin. Most of the things that I see from Simon Sinek are always about, tell him about the why. And that's all that I ever like. I don't go actively looking for Simon Sinek, but whenever it shows up on my feed, I'm like, yep, I've seen it. I've seen this. I've seen this. So something new, something fresh, I think will be great. You mentioned your team. What's the size of your team? Who consists of your team? We'd love to have a better understanding of a little bit, about that world as well.
My team right now is comprised of about six folks. One reports directly into me, and then he has a team of engineers as well. Very diverse team. He's responsible for our data and analytics across the entire healthcare enterprise. And so the diversity and thought of each individual person and the products that they own. And then when we come to a meeting, like the thought leadership and the kind of just the diverse thinking of how certain things can be applied, once we're having those discussions is really intriguing as well. It's a smaller team than I managed at my previous role. Had about eight or nine, sales reps in that role, which again, in both roles, and I haven't been ingrained in this role long enough yet to truly get to where I want to be, but in my previous role, what I really thrived on is working with them not only professionally from like role, like how can I do my job better, but they would also ask me, well, how do you think about this? And how do you, always approach it from this perspective? And it always gave me the opportunity to kind of have that true leadership role versus a management role. And I'm hoping to eventually get there. With this role, I will say, data is a totally different environment, right? It's the way of thinking is much different than sales, which is much different than clinical, and the way that you approach discussions is going to be different because of that perspective. And so I'm learning, and I think that the topic of leadership and learning and finding resources to develop that leadership, it's something I'm right in the middle of right now as we speak.
I love it. I mean, it's a great place to be honest with you, Kevin, right? If you already knew 100% of everything that you needed to know for this role, you would not be challenged and you would not be happy. And at the same
That's
time, of course, if you knew 0%, you would not be successful in the slightest bit, right? So there's a good balance here that gets brought in. So thank you for sharing about your team as well and really giving us an understanding of who comprises that. I'm sure that in the near future or in the long-term future, like there will be turnover, people will get promoted and they'll move on to bigger and better things. Your team may expand. And when those things happen, you will now be looking for somebody to backfill that vacancy. And so my question for all my guests, especially you today, is, when you think about individuals that come to the table with all the right qualifications, and everything looks great on paper, but now they're in front of you, what are some of those unspoken or unlisted qualities that you are looking for specifically to determine if they're going to be a great fit for you, for your team, and or your organization?
Yeah, there's a lot of questions you can ask in an interview around just teamwork, cross-functionality. Even asking, not personal questions, but just how they react in general to certain situations that may not be work-related can really tell you a lot of things about that person in certain situations and working with the team and those types of things. And so for me, and what I've been starting to do in these certain situations I've been put in is not situational based questions specific to work, right? But even outside of work, if you were to experience this situation just out walking around or you're driving or whatever, like how would you handle that situation? Because, a lot of that is going to influence how they, manage their work or how they behave, and what kind of behavior, change in behavior that you're going to have to work with as a manager. I think too, there's the opposite too, where a lot of times you just see on paper and you write them off because it's not as impressive. And to that note, I would at least try to give as many people a shot in an interview rather than just looking at a piece of paper and saying yes or no, because there are some people that may not be good at articulating all of their value that they can provide on a sheet of paper. And when you actually have a discussion with them, they blow you away. And that kind of tie it all back together. That kind of comes to, you can't use data to just strictly drive your decision making, right? Because if you do that, if you just look at a piece of paper and say, yeah, you're going to miss out on so much opportunity. In this case, folks that can better your organization. And I know that there's some organizations that are going to get hundreds of applications, and that's not realistic. But, you know, when you are working with kind of a smaller group of applications, you know, personally, I would advocate that you try to, you know, have those personal interactions as much as possible, because there are going to be some of those hidden gems that you just can't get all of that out of a piece of paper. And so it's, you know, I do look at different things, the diversity of thought process and those types of things when I'm hiring. You know, one example that I had down is when I say diversity of thought, I want people that don't think like me too, because I'm going to lean on them for different perspectives. And, you know, when I managed the team, both at Walmart and Tabula Rasa, I really loved hiring non-pharmacists because they provided a perspective that I would have never thought about. Or, you know, we mentioned at the very beginning of this, horse blinders and silo, because it's only the, you know, the thinking of a pharmacist. Some of the best decision-making, some of the best solutions have come from those conversations because of just the different kind of outside perspective that they were able to bring in. So I look at that too.
Kevin, I want to delve into this just a little bit deeper. So when you think about getting people to join your team that don't think like you, there is an element in that statement that makes me think, so do you look for people that challenge you and oppose your viewpoints because of how they're approaching it? Because like, that's a dicey situation, right? Like,
it's a balance.
Right? It's a balance. But is it a healthy balance to always have somebody that sees things contrary to you? And I don't know how it's possible necessarily to know that, oh, if I hire you, I am definitely going to always have like this just challenge, right? So different perspective is understandable, right? But a contrary perspective, like, have you ever had to deal with that on more than one occasion from the same individual? And how do you work through that?
Yeah, you're right. That is a, it's a good balance that you have to strive for. You know, and asking some of those more, you know, personal questions and how people react, how they handle confrontation and those types of things, those can provide some insight on a healthy challenge versus a defensive challenge. And, you know, it's defensive challenges just aren't going to lead to success. They're not going to lead to a productive conversation at all. But, you know, someone who is challenging with the mindset of, I want the discussion to be an improvement, or I want to get to an end goal of A that is better than what, you know, it was going into this discussion, there is healthy challenging. And I totally respect that, because to your earlier point, I don't have 100% of the answers. Most, if not all the time, when people challenge me and ask more questions, more things come on the table. And we, you know, like I was saying earlier, like, we produce better ideas and better products because of that challenging. So it is a balance. But I do think that it is healthy to hire people who are willing to challenge you, because it's not only going to make the team better, but it's going to make you better, both professionally and personally. I mean, it doesn't matter who it is, right? If you always have someone challenging you, whether it's your significant other or whether it's someone at work, like, you're always going to grow, whether you like it at that moment in time, you're going to grow.
Yep. I love the way that you framed that though, Kevin, like, cause you know, what you mentioned is number one, that there is an ultimate end goal that both of you are working towards. That's pretty similar, if not exactly the same. It's not just debate for the sake of debate. It's not just contrary opinions just to be contrary, right? It's like, well, yeah, you're bringing in a totally different perspective, and I can understand how you could see that because I didn't.
right? And in the interview process, I think that it requires, which is the other piece, it requires a certain amount of emotional intelligence on your part, my part, on the interviewer's part, to be able to recognize that if this is what I'm going to be dealing with, I need to be capable of having a conversation with this person and dialogue in a healthy capacity so that we're working towards the goal. And unfortunately, I can say there have been leaders in my experience that lack that emotional intelligence. And that's something that I think most people have had one encounter, at least in their career, and they may or they will have it. But that's also a good telltale sign if maybe that's not the right place for you and maybe you're not the right place for them. But this has been a great conversation, Kevin. I'm so grateful that we were able to make this happen. Very, very excited that you were able to join us on the show and really giving us some great insights into how you've been able to navigate your career and the great things that you're doing at Inmar Intelligence. So, Kevin, thanks for spending some time with me and the listeners today. As always, I look forward to seeing some of the great things that you plan on doing over the next few months. And I'm always looking forward to seeing you take healthcare to a higher level.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the time.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Healthcare and Hire podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow and subscribe for more. I'm your host, Iqbal Acha, and I invite you to connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Let me know what you thought about this episode or my show in general. Also, visit me at www.achainternational.com to learn more about how I help healthcare professionals and healthcare leaders advance their career, build a better brand, and create a leadership legacy. I'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, let's keep working to take healthcare to a higher level.